This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm John. Listeners, I've lied to you. I promised this week would be our Christmas special and Stephanie was going to come back and we were going to talk all sorts of nonsense. And I know there's a significant portion of you, I suspect, prefer her to me and think it's a bit rubbish when she's not here. Because, you know, she is better than me. So there we are. But it's not that episode this week. We are still hoping to do that. We've had to reschedule for various reasons, which I'm not going to go into. The word vomiting was involved. We're hoping to do that one next week. Although, given that we managed to put out the 50th episode special on this podcast on episode 51, it's quite possible our Christmas special will probably arrive in April. Anyway, here's the episode I was going to do next week when I was going to coast into Christmas by kind of doing a sort of here's one I made earlier thing. I don't know if you're a long time listener, you might remember that early on, for the first year or so of this podcast, we had an external producer. We had a guy called Royfield Brown, who as a professional podcast maker and kind of help us sort of put it together every week and sort of make it all sound shiny and use music. And if you ever wonder why around this time last year suddenly the production quality went off a cliff, that's because I started doing it in-house for various reasons. So the reason it often doesn't sound very good is because I'm doing it and I'm not a professional. Royfield and I are still in touch. I still appear on his US-UK politics podcast, Mid-Atlantic, once in a while. I also appeared on one of his other podcasts a few weeks ago. He does a thing called Friday 15, in which he just kind of interviews someone for 15, 20 minutes about a subject they're interested in. It's interspersed with some lovely music. And he asked me to go on that. We talked about where my love of maps comes from, which I've somehow managed to change into a career. So that's a sort of City Metric topic, and Royfield very, very kindly agreed that I could put it out on this feed as well. All he asked for in exchange was that I tell people to check out his other podcasts and go and subscribe. Go subscribe to Friday 15 if you like music. Go subscribe to Mid-Atlantic if you want to talk about politics. He has a great one called 10 American Presidents, How Jamaica Conquered the World. There's another. He's got quite a lot of these things going. So go check him out. He's been good to me. You should go help me repay the favour. So for once, someone's going to interview me. From here on to the end of the tape, it's just Friday 15 with all the bells and whistles and so on. So I'll hand over to Royfield.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both. Today we speak to New Statesman writer and editor of City Metric, John Ellidge, about the appeal of maps. Idiosyncratic and out of syncopation, All My Friends by New York Dance Meister's LCD Sound System features a beautiful and iconic intro. It was the second single from their second studio album, Sound of Silver, in 2007.
John, why do we love maps? What is it about the 2D representation of the world which so excites many of us?
Okay, so I've given this a lot of thought. I think good. One reason is it's about sort of placing yourself in relation to the world. It's about you can, you know, if you look at a map of your city or your country or something, you say, this is where I am. So it feels kind of personal in a way, you know, a representation of something else doesn't always. But also I think it's just like a density of information. You can see so much about a place and its history and the geography and so on in one flat image. And I think that's kind of an amazing feat of kind of, you know, engineering and design, that you can get that much in just into one single picture. So yeah, people love them. I mean, my entire website, City Metric, is, we found out very early on that, you know, maps is kind of our version of clickbait. You know, these always get the punters in, especially when, like, I mean, particularly like metro maps, like the Tube map is obviously the big one, but, you know, other cities have their own sort of equivalents. But I think there's kind of a related point around the metro, the Tube map specifically, which is, it's kind of like, if you live in a city like London, like there's like 9 million people in London. There are 9 million different Londons, because everyone has a slightly different experience of the city and what different places represent and what different places mean and so on. But the one common reference point, the one thing that will be of relevance to pretty much everyone, is the map of the transport system, because everyone will kind of know where they are on it. Everyone will use that system at some point, unless they're being a bloody Zach Goldsmith when he's running for mayor and it turns out he never even got the Tube. The vast majority of people in this city will deal with the Tube map in a way that any other reference point in London may not be relevant to the majority of people there. So I think there's just a sort of, it's a density of information and it's a universality to it that means people really like maps, you know?
But it's kind of interesting you talk about the density of information, because on the one hand you have the world map, and in theory everything's on there, every city, every village, every stream, every river, and then you have political boundaries. And then on the other hand you have metro maps, which are an exercise absolutely in reduction, aren't they? And really, whether it's a world map or whether it is a metro map, all maps lie in that they leave things out. So yeah, how...
I was actually going to reference this at some point. I don't know if you saw, maybe you saw this as well, but I remember in the 90s, early 90s, there was some kind of documentary series on like BBC Two or something. You know, one of those things my granddad recorded for me when I was a kid, which is all about maps. But the first episode of that was called A Tissue of Lies, because, you know, any map is a simplification, obviously. I mean, like, again, the Tube map is kind of the most obvious example, because, you know, it's quite well known how it distorts geography and kind of expands the centre and shrinks the suburbs, and it's all straight lines and so on. Everyone knows that's simplified. But the same is true as every map, you know? Like, if you kind of look at a road map, all the roads are kind of much bigger than they are in reality, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to see them. A political map of the world, and it sort of shows all the countries and sort of different colours and boundaries and so on. Well, like, a lot of those boundaries are pretty notional. You won't necessarily know you're crossing one. It's not like there's literally a line on the floor that says you are now leaving. They reflect a particular conception of reality rather than reality as it stands.
What was the map that turned you onto cartography as a little John Elledge? Can you remember?
I mean, the first one would have been the Tube map, which you kind of really talked about. Like, I can't work out whether I was interested in maps or London first. Like, I grew up in the suburbs. I grew up in Hornchurch, which is one of the Essex suburbs, about 15 miles out of London. Well, you know, it's just about on the Tube, and it has the Metropolitan Police and so on, but it's not really like London in many other ways. It's kind of quite, it's pretty white. It thinks of itself as Essex. And so, you know, being able to locate myself on the Tube map, or in the, you know, my big well-thumbed Greater London Street Atlas, was kind of a way of tying myself to this sort of bigger, much more interesting place. I didn't like Essex very much. I never really sort of fitted in with, you know, white trainers and, you know, chinos and you know, press Ben Sherman and leave it Barry, he's not worth it, that kind of thing. That's not really, and you know, the bit of suburbia I grew up in, when people talk about the Essex, the idea of Essex, that's what they mean, the place I grew up. You know, I could say as many times as I like, well, technically it's not in Essex anymore, it's in Greater London. And that's true, but it's also nonsense. I think the interest in all the time I spent staring at the London street alleys and kind of tracing like how you would get between the centre of town and my house. It came out of that desire for escape, I suppose.
You talk about the London Street Atlas, and I don't know whether that was the A to Z or it was kind of Bartholomew's. But so where do you sit now with Google Maps? Because it's pure nostalgia for me. When I first moved down to London, I needed to get an A to Z. Everybody needed to have an A to Z. Whether you were a Londoner, new, old or transplanted, everybody had an A to Z. You don't have that anymore. And there is something about the visceral sense of turning a page where the road that you're travelling on runs off the page and you've got to turn over. And then sometimes it's not even the next page. You've got to go forward to page 85 and you're on page 23 or something or another. And I kind of miss that. I love to watch the blue dot move on my phone. I absolutely do. I still have a sense of wonder that happens, but I miss a paper map.
I mean, I think it's in terms of not getting lost. I'm not like anti Google Maps at all. I think actually it's an incredible piece of technology that is incredibly useful. I remember when a friend of mine, a guy called Mick, when he first moved to London, I went for a drink with a guy, and I happened to have one of my battered old street maps, and a little pocket A to Z, and obviously he didn't know the area very well. So I kind of gave it to him. It's like a welcome present. It's just like, you're a Londoner now, mate. You're going to need one of these sort of thing. But you wouldn't do that these days. One of the many sort of old street maps I've collected from somewhere or another down the years is a very old map of London from dating to like the 50s or something. Like, you know, Docklands is still, we've got actual working docks in it. That's how old it is. But the reason I particularly like this one is because the last street heading east out of London, at the very edge of the map, is my mum's street. And there's just something quite nice about the idea of being the last street in London, you know? It's an entirely notional thing, because actually it's literally not the last street. Like, suburbia continues for another couple of miles. It's just purely coincidence. It happens to be the last one on this map. And you don't really get an equivalent of that with like Google Maps.
One of the things which I absolutely love about maps is that they are a snapshot of time, that whether it is a representation of a political map from the Middle Ages, which is a modern map, so you can see the Holy Roman Empire, or the constituent parts of Spain before it was Spain, so Aragon and Castile or Leon or Granada, etc. And then you have the street maps of London, and let's say it might be like 1810, so there's no Regent Street on it yet, and just to see how the city has actually progressed, how it's actually developed, which is a very neat way of me saying you've decided to have Time by Pink Floyd as your piece of music, John Elledge. I took you to task first off, because I said, here we go, here's a bit of obvious white boy music, no offence intended, because we're mates here, joshing, but this was an absolutely beautiful and evocative piece of music. Tell us all about Time by Pink Floyd.
I mean, the first thing to say is I am, you weren't telling me anything I didn't know, I am the whitest guy in the world, like, you're lucky. I really love this track, partly because, you know, it's on Dark Side of the Moon, which is the biggest album from 1973. And I first heard it when I was like maybe 16, 17. And I just like the sound of it. It's got this sort of long build up, and it's just quite haunting the way it's, and it's just a lovely, lovely piece of sound design. And it's only, you know, nearly 20 years on now, as I've got older, that a lot of the stuff in the lyrics actually sort of haunts me a little bit about how, like, oh, there's a line in here, it's, you know, when you are young and life is long and there is time to kill today. I do kind of think back on my youth, and like all the time I spent literally doing nothing. You know, what did I think I was doing with my time? Like, and I just kind of look back on myself, you could have been writing books, you could have been out there seeing the world, and you were literally just pissing about until the middle of the night and then going to bed. It's a lovely piece of music, but also it does kind of haunt me, just like this sort of idea of, like, you know, time accelerates as you get older. And I'm feeling that a lot at the moment. As I'm kind of like, I'm staring down the barrel of 40 at this point. So, you know, my own death haunts me now.
Thank you. Isn't essential to your life as it possibly is to me, but other than Pink Floyd, what else are you into, Mr. John?
I mean, my tastes have kind of gone back in time. Like when I was a kid, I was always into, like, I was an indie kid, not in like any significant culture, but that was the music I was into. Your Pulp and your Blurs and Radiohead and Oasis and all that kind of stuff. And I tried to keep up with everything until probably about 2007, except it was Radio 4 from here on in. And I put a lot of music on when I'm working. I mean, for the most part, something insane like 70% of it will be something about like the Beatles or Bowie. I'm not really one to sort of like check out the latest thing anymore. I've kind of accepted that part of my life is over.
Music does help to put certain locations on the map though, doesn't it? So here I am in San Francisco, and if you were to say to the average American, name a UK city other than London, Liverpool is going to be very high on that list, all because of the Beatles. Or if you say to somebody, jazz, where does it come from? Invariably, they'll end up saying kind of New Orleans. So in terms of kind of geography, you know, you can actually map out music, can't you?
You can. In fact, I think actually one of the things I think about a lot when I'm writing about cities is your own hometown of Birmingham is, despite being, you know, one of Britain's biggest cities, I think it sort of lacks that sort of international reputation of like a Liverpool or a Manchester. There are two reasons for that. One of which is there aren't really musical movements associated with Birmingham in the same way. I mean, like, whenever I've said this before, people always point out heavy metal.
Yeah.
But it's not sort of intimately associated with place in the way like the Beatles or the Merseytown is associated with Liverpool. Or like there was a movement called Manchester, you know, like the name of the city itself is kind of much more closely tied to the music than heavy metal is to Birmingham, because it was just like, that's the place it came from, but it wasn't about Birmingham. Mm. And yet the other reason I think it's not so well known is you know, Birmingham FC, isn't that great?
Well,
music,
you know,
and football, just things people know about British cities.
Absolutely. And I think there is actually a third reason as well, is that we're not known in terms of the Industrial Revolution necessarily for one industry. So we can't say steel like Sheffield or cotton like Manchester. We did too many things here. So imprinted in the kind of the psychic memory of the UK, there isn't a Birmingham in that kind of regard, and it's kind of big almost by accident. But kind of the history of Birmingham is something which is incredibly fascinating in terms of mapping and urban planning, because obviously the city centre has changed an awful lot. Birmingham's been one of these cities where at one point it had this traditional, but let's say, Victorian street pattern, but then the council came and ripped that all up in the 60s. Could you explain to us, because what you do at City Metric is obviously run a site which is about mapping, but it's also about the policies of the ramifications of the policies actually of spacing out utility. So where exactly does mapping start, data start, and then actually real life actually then begin in terms of mashing that all together, John?
I mean, I guess maps are—they're not just sort of a fun thing for geeks to point at and dream a faraway place. They are—they're a practical tool. Like, it comes back to density of information. If you kind of want a representation of what a city like Birmingham looks like that will help you kind of redesign it, then you need a good map. You're not going to get far in city planning without a map, are you? So,
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
True that. Now, just before we go, here's some throwaway questions for you. What's your favourite world projection, sir? Are you a Mercator man? Are you Peters? What are you?
Oh God, you know, the terrible thing is I can never remember which one's which.
Well, you're a bit of a lefty, so I'm guessing you want to turn the world upside down. Why is north or is it the top? Let's have, you know.
I do love those slightly weird maps where, you turn it upside down, it does kind of give you a different perspective. I think it's the Peters projections, the one that kind of does it by equal area rather than sort of equal distance. But it's like, you do get that weird thing with, it's really not helping, I can't remember which projection is which, is it? But the traditional projection.
Mercator is the traditional one. Yes, yeah, so Greenland and Russia and Canada are just.
Yeah, so it makes Greenland look like almost as big as the continent of Africa, mm-hmm. and it's like you know 2% the size or something crazy. It just distorts areas so much around the poles that Europe looks relatively a lot bigger and more important than it actually is, and you just miss the fact that Africa is big enough to contain the US and China and India all at the same time. It's not so much about having a favorite map, but I think like maps that challenge your perspective, things that kind of shift the way you see things.
All right. And geographical oddities. You can have a physical one. You can have a political one. Go.
Okay, so I don't know if this counts as physical or political, but one of my favourites is there's a place called the Northwest Angle in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. It's basically a tiny bit of land surrounded, which has got a lake on one side and Canada on the rest. If you just kind of look at it physically, you'd be surprised it's in the US at all. The reason it is because when they were first settling where the boundary would be between the early United States and British North America, which later became Canada. The way they did that is they kind of decided to draw a straight line west out of a point until it hit the Mississippi, and that was your boundary. And the problem was, it never hit the Mississippi. The Mississippi had stopped by then. So they had to rethink this, but you ended up with this ridiculous bit of the United States stuck in Canada. I'm trying to think of other strange oddities. I used to write a series called Boundary Issues about these weird... these weird oddities. In Scotland, there's a county called Rosshire and a county called Cromartyshire. Mm-hmm. And one of them is just a collection of isolated packages of land inside the other. So it looks like
again, I'm not helping by not being able to remember which is which, but I think it's Ross Shear, and then Cromarty Shear is a bunch of like tiny bits of land, like somebody's dropped a plate. Some earl or thane or whatever aristocratic rank he held just bothered the Scottish crown in the 17th century saying he wanted his own county, so they let him call all his bits of land a separate county that just happens to be completely surrounded by this other county. You know, you just end up with stuff like that. It's completely crazy. I love it.
And the very last question, sir. You're on your deathbed, your loved ones are around you, seeing you off. What is the last map you'll gaze at?
See, I think this is a slight category error, because as much as I like a map, you know, I love a map. Maps are a big part of my life. But, you know, if I'm lying on my deathbed, that's really not going to be my priority at the time, you know?
Yeah, you're not the map geek I thought you were then. You are not the map geek I thought you were, John Edge. Thank you for coming on to Friday 15 and to dispel me of the notion that you're obsessed with maps. You're just like everybody else, really.
Yeah, you know, it's a living. Out in the street, they call it murder. Welcome to Jamrock, camp where the thugs and camp at. 2 pounds are within a van back. It in your handbag, your knapsack, it in your backpack. The smell of your girlfriend contact. Some boy not know this. Them only come around like tourists on the beach with a few club sodas. Bedtime stories and pearls like them named Chuck Norris. And don't know the real hardcore, cause sandals are no back to. It tugs them with the way them got to. And won't think twice to shot you. Don't make them spot you unless you carry guns a lot too. A beer tough thing come at you. When trench town man stop laugh and block off traffic, then them wheel and pop off and them start clap it. With the pin file long and it happy trap it. Police come in a jeep and them can't stop it. Some say them a playboy rabbit. Funny man a get dropped like a bad habit. Some a bad a post off if you don't have it. Rastafari stands alone. Welcome to Jamrock. Hey. Welcome to Jamrock. Out in the street, they call it murder. Welcome to Jamdong. Poor people are dead at random. Political violence can't done. Pure ghosts and phantom. The youth them get blind by stardom. Now the king of kings are called. Old man to pick me. So wave on no one if you with me. To see the sufferation sick me. Them suit no fit me. To win election them trick with them. Them don't do nothing at all. Come on, let's face it. I get our education's basic. And most of the youth them waste it. And when them waste it, that's when them take the guns, replace it. Then them don't stand a chance at all. And that's why enough little youth have up some fatmatic. With the extra magazine in a them back pocket. And have bleach at night time in a some black jacket. All who not lock glocks at them a lock rocket. Them we pull you up a current like a shock socket. Them we run a roadblock which for the cops block it. And from now till a morning no stop clock it. If them run out of rounds I broke back ratchet.
Welcome to Jamrock by Grammy award-winning reggae artist Damon Junigong Marley brought the one drop back to reggae in 2005. Quite simply, it is the most influential piece of reggae music produced in the 21st century. Welcome to Jamrock. Out in the street, they call it murder. Jamaica, Jamaica. Jamaica, Jamaica.
So fine, so fine. Since I woke up, so is my state of mind. Ooh, since we've been apart, baby, God has healed my heart. And darling, your love is just like music.
Can I just say, you and me are meant to be.
Just like music.
just like music by Marvin Gaye, was recorded by Gaye in the Singer's recording studio in 1978, from sessions recorded from the recording of Gaye's other albums. The whole song is a slow, sexy masterpiece, but the first 40 seconds are a dreamlike wonder. It's just like music.
Hope you enjoyed this week's show. Don't forget, you can follow the show's progress on Facebook by simply typing in Friday 15. You can also find us on Twitter, where you can follow me, where I'm at Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. Now, every Thursday, you can jump onto Twitter and tweet me and nominate a song for me to put into this week's Friday 15. iTunes reviews, folks, are extremely important. They're the lifeblood of any podcast. Please go onto iTunes and write us a glowing review. And don't forget, finally, you can email me. We're on Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D, at gmail.com. See you all again in 7 days' time for more good music.